Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're speaking with Deborah James about running and cancer.
Come on then, Rick. Everyone's waiting for it. Everyone wants to hear how you broke 8 hours for the South Downs 50.
You're very cruel. You're a cruel man. No,
no, come on. I want. First of all, I want to know about race day atmosphere.
Yeah, amazing to be back racing with actual people, an actual event. Also blessed with like amazing weather. So it was like, I think it was maybe up to about 15 degrees, but really beautiful, like not cloud in the sky, not particularly windy. Yeah, along the South Downs Way. Yeah, it doesn't really get much better than that in the UK. So yeah, that all that stuff was great. It was very, very well organised. And from a safety perspective, lots of stuff was in there. So it was like a rolling start. So you could start any time between 6 and 8:30. And then the aid stations, everything was kind of wrapped individually. So it wasn't like kind of like, it wasn't a buffet. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't a kind of free for all.
Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And
okay.
Yeah, so that, all that stuff was great. And it gave me a lot of faith that the races, you know, can begin to get back to a sort of relative normality. So all that part was great. And yeah, they're adventures, aren't they, these things? Because you're out, in my case, you're out almost all day. Yeah, there are highs and lows. And there's some funny incidents. Before I tell you how badly I actually did, one lovely high point was, it's about 10 miles in, and it was a little earlier, a place on the route called the Chanctonbury Ring, which is like just absolutely beautiful. And I was chatting with my mate George, and a female runner in front said, "Oh, I recognise you from the Runner's World podcast, and I've had you guys on, like accompanying me on all my long runs for this race." And that was so nice, mate, to hear that. It was so nice because it was
that's amazing.
That's really sweet.
Like, yeah, it was really sweet. Yeah, so that was lovely to hear that we're having, you know, they've got listeners.
You found our listener.
We've got listeners. And even better than that, you know, they're actually, the podcast is occasionally being put on during people's runs for races. So that was great. That was a really nice sort of positive thing early on. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Well, thank you to her. That's great. How was your race?
I'd say it was a race of two halves, I'd say. So the first half went pretty well. There was one funny incident where my mate George, just before the second aid station, was like, I'm just gonna disappear for a second. So I was like, okay, call on nature, fair enough. And I went into the aid station, which was about another 300 meters down the road. But we didn't really communicate, so I hung around that aid station waiting for him to come in for about 15 minutes, and I was trying to call him. I couldn't get through, and I was like, you know what, I'm sure he's just cracked on. And he thought that I hadn't gone in at all. So he's basically chasing me in his mind. And I'm doing the same thing. So this was about 16 and 25 miles. And we both probably ran that bit way too quick because we were sort of chasing each other, trying to catch up.
Oh, no.
It's quite funny. You don't really expect to lose people doing these things. But I think got through that actually in about 4 hours. So if anything, was on a kind of sub-8 schedule, although obviously you're going to slow down the second half, so looking back that isn't sub-8 at all. And then it's just stuff like, I could blame it on injury to a certain extent, like my right knee became like incredibly sore, like just ITB stuff, but like it turned everything into like a walk run, increasingly more of a walk. But really, I think I just didn't do, I hadn't done enough long running, hadn't done enough racing, so maybe lacking a little bit of that toughness. And if I'm honest, I guess when that original goal started slipping, it's very easy then for it to become, not only for you to miss out, but to miss out by a lot. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, well,
oh, who cares? If you're missing it, you're missing it.
Yeah, and it's become more about enjoyment, and especially on a nice day, it was kind of like, well, you know what, look, let's just let's just go and enjoy ourselves. Let's just stop here. So no, I was way out. I mean, I was like over an hour, away from it. So that's, that's something to look at. I think that was a good wake-up call for me, like actually, how fit are you?
I think 9 hours is...
Well, it wasn't 9 hours. It was a bit over 9 hours.
But still amazing to have done it.
I was still, I mean, honestly, though, 50 miles on the South Downs Way in a bit over nine hours is still
incredible.
Absolutely fun. It's still such a good result. Well, not the one you wanted, but still brilliant.
Yeah, single digits. I'm going to take that. Single digits. But
all right, perfect.
I think this is really interesting, isn't it? Because it's like, obviously, I've never done an ultra, but I remember... when I was speaking to Lewis, who's the guy who coaches me, he was saying, why sub 4? Like, why do we have these times? Because he said the second you go to 4:01, you're like, well, no point now. And you just give up. And it's like that thing, isn't it? Of having like whole numbers in your head. Like, what? So, no one ever aims for like, you didn't aim for like eight and a half hours. You're like under eight. And it's so easy to do, isn't it? When it's gone, you're like, oh, well, give up. Let's walk.
Yeah, I think also for me, like, you know, like we all probably have an idea of marathons, don't we? Because it's like you're unlikely of a marathon to set yourself a time that is like absolutely beyond what you could do. Do you know what I mean? You might be like, oh, I said sub 4 and I did 4:10 or whatever. But I guess I was just plucking numbers out of the sky with this. I was like, sub 8, you know, like 9.5. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, that's another thing. It's kind of like, to really kind of know or to have some indication of what you might be able to run. Otherwise, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure before you begin, I think.
I think super ambitious targets are the only way that you can do it, though.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, mate. Yeah.
It gets you to the line. It gives you something to motivate. I mean, there's obviously like, there's definitely a very delicate balancing act between too ambitious and achievable.
Yeah,
but you know, you've got to have that sort of sense in your head. Otherwise, you won't ever really go for it. And then you learn more because then you'll go, oh wow, like I was not in the condition or whatever to get that time. Yeah. And I realize that that's based on this much training or this lack of racing or those sorts of things. And that's where you get the knowledge from rather than anything else.
Yeah,
you're not losing, Rick. You're learning, right?
That's right. Win or learn.
How do you feel now? Do you feel like... are you really okay? Or do you feel like really disappointed? I think it's awful when people feel disappointed and I'm like, oh my God, you've just run 50 miles. Like, shut up.
Yeah, I think that's true, Jane. It's only the second time I've ever run that particular distance. And my mate George was good on that. It's like, this is still like, you know, this is still a great achievement itself. I was like, yeah, actually, absolutely. Yeah, to cover that distance in a day, anyone who did it, anyone who completed that race is incredible. Deserves a pat on the back. I guess, your goals just change, don't they, in time. And if you feel like you've already done that distance, then it's harder to give yourself like the kind of credit for doing it again. I'm sure lots of people fall into that trap with a marathon as well. It's not like if you're like, oh, I know I could have done better, then actually some of the joy can get taken away. But it was good. I think I just need to concentrate on some of the shorter stuff, though, to be honest. I'm going to find that way easier to train for. That's the other thing about this. It's like, I was a bit like, look, I live in a hilly part of London, so the hill part of it is not going to be awful. It's not going to be so different. And it is. It's massively, massively different, you know. And it was pretty naive of me to think that I could replicate that. You know, the terrain is completely different. The hills are 4 or 5 times higher than what you can get access to in South London. And that over 50 miles is gonna take its toll on you if you haven't been able to sort of train as specifically as you might have done. So that's all good learning as well. But I think maybe if you're living in a city like we are, maybe if you're interested in times and performing, then you should pick your races along those lines as well.
Yeah, but you would have normally travelled out to the race, or certainly parts of the route, right?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I know when you did the 100, you were visiting sections of it quite regularly and running those.
I was child-free at that point, though, wasn't I? I was child-free
back
then. Mate,
this is it. A warning to all, remain child-free and then your running will be fine.
Were you both running on the weekend?
Yeah, I think I can class it as run some. So if anyone doesn't know, we've got the campaign running, which is a sort of just Google run some and you'll find lots of info about this campaign, which is a great campaign. So I did a bit of that, which was where I ran to Lidl and bought a sand pit for the garden for the kids and then walked home carrying it. So I think I've done a bit of cardio and a bit of strength and conditioning there.
Yeah, for sure.
With my run sand. It was actually really heavy. I mean, it shouldn't be surprising. It's a sand pit. It's not. It hasn't got sand in it. That would have been insane. But it's the wooden frame of a sand pit, and it was heavy. So I've that ticked off a bit of using running to do a job.
Yeah, Ben, so I'm enjoying your really like bizarre times of your running at the moment on your Instagram, like with a head torch, really, really late at night. Like like it. It's breaking the mold.
My running is now all either task based or like I spent all day eating cake and I have to move. that's why I did a 10K trail run at like 10 o'clock at night because
I'd
spent all day with the kids eating cake. And it wasn't like a guilt thing. Like, I mean, just to sort of clarify, it wasn't like I felt guilty because I've eaten all the food, but I don't know if anyone else is like this, but if you eat a lot of sugar, I just get super fidgety. Like it makes me feel physically a bit like,
okay,
twitchy. Do you know what I mean? Like it's that level of stuff. So I was actually just sitting there feeling like I feel really gross and I've got to go and run some of this cake off. And that was it.
Fair enough. How about you, Jane?
Yeah, I did. And back to kind of a 10 mile long run at the weekend. And I just like 10 miles. It was meant to be 11 this week. And I thought, no, I want it to be 10. So I just like that. I like the round number. I like the route I do. I like doing a 10 mile run. And I know that it should have been a bit longer, but I think sometimes it's fine to be like, I'm just going to stop here and I'm okay with that. And yeah.
It's a great distance.
It's a good
distance.
I wish
there were more 10 mile races. I think it's a great distance.
Me too. Yeah.
Me and our esteemed editor-in-chief Andy Dixon have had a conversation how we think that 10 miles is actually the perfect running distance.
Yeah, I do. Because I think like if you wanted me to run a half marathon tomorrow, I know I could do it. But I just like doing a 10 mile run. I've not got any desire to run any further than that on the weekends at the moment. I just came back feeling really happy. And that's all you want, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Right, should we get our guest of the week on then?
Yes, let's do it. A couple of technicals meant that we recorded on Zoom. You'll hear that there's a bit of chat of everyone over the top of each other. We tried to edit it out as much as possible, but it sounds great anyway. So let's get into it. Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete,
could be a physio, or a complete unknown. Deborah James was 35 when she found out she had stage 4 bowel cancer. She's gone on to write and talk about the need for people to be more aware of the symptoms of bowel cancer and is one of the hosts of the award-winning podcast You, Me and the Big C. Alongside this, Deborah is a keen runner and has signed up for the Vitality London 10K at the end of May. Deborah, welcome to the Runners World podcast.
Thank you for having me. I love the introduction of a keen runner. I classify myself much more as a proud plodder. I think a proud plodder is it. Yeah, okay. It's something that I'm pretty proud to be calling myself that, but a keen runner I aspire to be.
Okay, so that would be like a sort of graduation to the keen runner status, yeah.
Absolutely, hopefully one day.
Well, how did you become a plodder then, Deborah? What was your kind of journey into running?
So I've always been pretty sporty my whole life. I used to be a gymnast actually, kind of growing up. So sport has been part and parcel of what I've done since day one. And then running has always been that thing that you can kind of do alongside your job at some point, because you don't need to rely upon the gym being open or whatever it is. And I used to work as a teacher and used to kind of need to get my trainers on and run, albeit not very fast. But my first, I suppose, entry into slightly longer distance running, I suppose, was when I first met my husband in 2000 and I should know this. 2005. That's a good test, isn't it? I hope he now doesn't listen because he'll see the awkward pause of like, oh my gosh. And within a couple of weeks of meeting each other, you know, when you kind of I was 22 at the time, and you know when you're a little bit kind of where you're just basically showing off to your partner.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I want to run a marathon. And he was like, I want to run a marathon. So the next week we both signed up to run the New York Marathon. And this was in the January. And obviously the New York happens kind of in the November. And luckily we stayed together and we did then jump on a plane and go and run the New York Marathon. I've never run the London Marathon actually as a course yet, but obviously we're going to talk about that later. But yeah, that was my entry into kind of running. For I suppose medals, which I now am a medal collector. I like my medals.
I just like the fact that it was basically pressure to impress someone, which is I think probably why that's probably how a lot of people get into it, to be honest. But yeah, I think that was that's a great way of signing. Yeah, let's do a marathon together. Oh god, what have we done?
Did you run it together?
Wow. Do you know, no, I can't believe it. And that's a kind of a, you know, a sign of, well, not love, I suppose. So we agreed not to run it together. And neither of us were in it for the time. We were just in it to complete it. It transpired, actually. So my husband set off kind of thinking he was going to do it in a set time and obviously did the first half marathon pretty quickly. Then his knee went and he ended up pretty much walking the second half. And we ended up completing it within 10 minutes of each other anyway. So the reality is we should have just run it together and he should have stopped showing off, really.
Yeah, tortoise in the hare wins again.
Absolutely, but it was fun. Although the thing that I highly don't recommend to people unless they are super fit and you know, used to this, is within a couple of hours of finishing the marathon I had to get straight back on a plane to get back to London to work, because as anyone who works in the front line knows, you just can't take the time off. So I literally spent the whole kind of 7 hours back from New York pretty much in tears because my body had seized up.
Wow.
And you know when you don't know the city very well, you kind of like had been pacing up and down on a plane, and I remember it was really not a pleasant experience, that part. The rest of it was great.
Wow. Yeah, I can't think of anything worse post-marathon than just being confined to a seat. That sounds really bad.
And then having to teach, right, as well. I always think like the greatest tip for anyone doing a marathon is book the next day off work. That's the first thing. Book the next day off work, 100%. You can go and enjoy yourself. But yeah, back in the classroom, amazing.
Well, absolutely. But I think since then, I've always used running, and I say that in inverted commas, but essentially getting my trainers on and getting outside, whatever it looks like, run, walk, whatever it looks like. I've always used the milestones. So whether that is a 5K, a 10K, to, I suppose, rebuild myself or to celebrate things or whatever it might be. So even before I had cancer, it was those kind of races I used. Races sounds really grand. I was still a proud blogger back then. But those kind of events, A, I love the atmosphere. And I think, you know, that's what we've all missed over the last year. But B, it gave me some, you know, I realise in my life I need to have that kind of timetable or that goal to work towards. And I like the big shiny medals. Like, I don't think there's any shame in saying that, because I think actually I look back at those medals for whatever it is, whether it's for the local 5K race or for the New York Marathon. And I feel really proud because each and every single one of them, at least I said yes and I got my trainers on and I turned up and I did it.
I mean, we'll talk on this a bit later, I'm sure, but how significant have those races been to you since your diagnosis? As in, obviously they're great benchmarks for all runners when they sign up and there's a challenge, but when your cancer diagnosis came around, was it more that you wanted those races more than ever and the medals are more important just because they're there now? The significance of them is that every single one is important.
Yeah, so they're even more important now. So my sister-in-law actually set up the Royal Parks Half Marathon. So she was director of the Royal Parks. Oh. And anyone who's ever run that marathon over the last 10 years will know that it's actually, if you were back there 10 years ago, you will know that it's actually changed in many guises. It was a marathon, they had a walking thing, and now it is the race that we know it to be, which is, in my mind, probably one of the most beautiful half marathons in this country. And there's a massive family connection to that marathon. And I have been there at every race, whether it's with my son, newly born, doing the walking half marathon, whether it's in the 10K, whatever guise it looked like. And there was one year that I didn't run it. And the year that I didn't run it was the first year that I was diagnosed with cancer. And instead, as quite often will happen, a big group, there was about 30 of my friends and family, all ran it for charity, for which I was incredibly grateful. But I found actually the opposite happened in terms of whilst I was really grateful, I got so emotional. I couldn't stand there and watch other people run. Mm. I actually got really angry is the wrong word, but I got incredibly upset about it because I wanted to run just because I had cancer. I was like, why aren't I running? And it was almost a bit of a light bulb moment in terms of, can I run alongside chemo? Yes. Actually, it's really good for you to have kind of controlled exercise, and to actually now the guidelines is very much to have the same amount of exercise and to always check with your physician in terms of what they recommend. But essentially there was no reason that I shouldn't be running. Mm. And I then kind of said to myself, yeah, I need to just almost set myself goals. So unfortunately for me, because I hate the word journey, but living with cancer is a massive roller coaster, especially incurable cancer. And sometimes it is 10 steps forward, 100 steps back. I use things like, say, 5Ks or 10Ks as a benchmark to kind of, I know I have to start again, but I know if I can get back to 5K again, or I can get back to a particular race, or I can get back to that half marathon, I get really emotional about it. And that half marathon, the Royal Parks one, is a massive thing for me. The other race that's incredibly emotional for me is there's a beautiful race in Kew Gardens. It's the 10K, it's the Kew 10K. Mm. And it actually went ahead last year, incredibly well organized, I have to say. So for anybody that took part in it, it was socially distanced, it was well managed, it was beautifully run. I don't know whether any of you guys took part in that, but it was an absolutely incredible race under the circumstances. And that again is one of those races that I have been there, and every time I'm back there I'm reminded, actually, I've gone through a lot, but I'm back there again with my sister, and I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. I find it harder watching the London Marathon, for sure. I'm like a wreck, like sobbing at people. Like, a dad has to hug a kid and I'm like, done. And you did the virtual London Marathon this year. How did that go? It was rainy, it was horrible, wasn't it? But did you love it?
I did love it from an emotional perspective, but from a practical perspective, it was hell, actually, to be really honest with you. It was kind of, anyone who was out that day running will know that it was kind of, you know, really good British, hideous weather. Yeah. And I did the route. I live in Southwest London, so I do like the river route, which is essentially like the Hammersmith Putney kind of route. And I started at the Royal Marsden, which is where I'm treated. And essentially kind of looped back down to Chiswick and up, and did a couple of loops actually in the morning in Battersea Park, and there were loads of people doing their early runs there, which was amazing. My commitment to the London Marathon actually went back years ago, in that I've always wanted to run the London Marathon. Ever since I ran the New York Marathon, I'm like, I have to, if I'm going to run one more marathon or plod round or get round one more marathon, it will be London. And I had, and I'm sure many people have been in this situation where I applied in the ballot for years and years and years, eventually got my place and then got pregnant and then deferred it, then got injured and deferred it again. But obviously there's only so many times, and then never got my place back, and kind of never, you know, sometimes you need that to make the commitment. And then it was cancer that made me kind of bring that commitment to the table. And I'm not now, but there was a moment just over a year ago, where on paper I had no evidence of disease. So it's a really good place to be. And I kind of, I think it was on BBC Breakfast. It was Louise Mitchum, who's obviously like a big fan of the London Marathon and often runs it, said, "Go on then, are you going to run the marathon with me?" And I said, "Yep, yeah, okay, fine then." And as you do.
On TV.
On TV. And I managed to get a space in it for that year. And then lo and behold, COVID happened. So I ran it socially distanced with another girlfriend of mine who's also a patient at the Royal Marsden. We ran it to raise money for the Royal Marsden, and alongside my sister as well. And it was really emotional. But I remember thinking, I've now got to live another year just to actually run the marathon. Like, come on, seriously, it's like getting even harder. Like, so most people, yeah, we have to go through a pandemic, but I have to go through cancer and a pandemic, you know, incurable cancer. But now, so I assumed that they were going to be doing the marathon on, April, which obviously, thankfully, they made the sensible decision not to, because otherwise it wouldn't be going ahead. And it just so happens that it now falls on October the 3rd, which is also my 40th birthday weekend. Whoa. And I was told that I would never see my 40th birthday. So now I am planning on seeing my 40th birthday and hopefully running a marathon. So if I make it to that, which will be my 5-year diagnosis, pretty much, like, give or take a couple of weeks. So if I actually make it to that finish line, I don't care how slow I am, but I am going to be an absolute disaster. I'm going to be crying for like 24 of the 20 like odd miles. It's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, dehydration could really become an issue. you need to be very careful there, especially if it's hot.
Do you think that, like, that setting yourself challenges, and let's talk about running challenges, has in some ways, like, not necessarily improve your giving you more longevity, but do you think that actually, yeah, like, running and moving around does make you feel a bit more positive about the future?
Absolutely. I think it's really difficult, isn't it, because people will say, right, I know that you're gonna beat cancer, and I use that again in kind of the inappropriate use of language around cancer. But the reality, none of us really have control over our cancer, but we do have control over our mind and the way that we handle it. And I have two options, and trust me, I have really rubbish days where I don't want to do anything. But I recognize now that I have tools in my bag, as we all do. I think we've all had to kind of dig deep in COVID, haven't we, and use a lot of the tools, whatever they look like. And for me, I suppose when I am feeling rubbish, actually the running is a kind of, how do you flip your mindset? And actually, whether it is running or walking, whatever it looks like, putting my trainers on and calling myself a runner is a really good starting point for me, because if I get bad news, there's only so many hours I can sit and kind of cry for over it. And then it's kind of like, how am I going to get out of it? Because you just spiral otherwise. So yeah, it allows you to cope with it. I think that's what it is. It's a coping mechanism, very much so. And also, it's the only time that I feel quite free. I think, you know, anyone, whether they are a proud plodder or a fast speedy runner, will recognize the feeling of freedom that you get when you run along, well, for me it's the river. Everyone has their favorite place, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
I think it was Rick, you'll correct me, but I think it was Kevin Webber we had on.
Yeah.
And Kevin had prostate cancer, and he was telling us a story about how it was a full moon one night, and he went out to have a look at the full moon because he thought, oh well, I'm just going to have a look at a full moon because, you know, I might not see another one. And he just went and had a look, and he was just in his normal, I think just normal jeans and something like that. And then he decided that he was outside, so he might as well go for a run because he was outside now. So he went for a run, and he just went and did, I think, like 5 miles or something in his jeans, and then came home. And it was that it was that sense of freedom, because it was combined with, I might as well go for a run now because I don't know when I'll be able to next. If I, as you say, if I have a bad day or I get some bad news, it might not be that I can go again soon. So I'm outside. I've seen a lovely full moon. I'm going to go and run 5 miles. And he did it. And it was amazing because it gives you that sort of switch of just like when we sit and complain about, like, oh, I've got a training session coming up. Oh, I've got to go and do whatever miles, you know, oh, I can't be bothered, it's cold, blah, blah, blah. And it's actually that flip of it being like, this is such a privilege to be able to go out and do that little effort, that little run, that you just kind of have to, as you say, you have these tools to help you kind of just get through it. And I think COVID, as you say, everyone else has had to deal with that, like, oh wow, I can go out for on my own for an hour a day, like, wow, that's such a treat now. Whereas before I would have been like, oh, two runs a day, whatever, like, you know, you skip, you know, oh, I can't be bothered. And you suddenly become, it's these sort of taken for granted four privileges that we all have.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Yeah, you're right though about, for me, I can never stick to a plan. So if I was training for something, that's just not an option really for me, because actually I do have to listen to my body. We all have to listen to our bodies, but for me, it's pretty unpredictable and I'm quite often thrown a curveball. So I remember actually running, this sounds really slow. It is really slow, but I don't care. I'm really proud of it. I'm like, I keep on saying I'm not fast, but I managed to get my 5K under half an hour. I'm really chuffed about this. This is taking forever. I get that that is like nothing to a lot of people, but for me, that's really
good. I think
good.
You're doing yourself a disservice here. I think running is just running. I think that that's kind of like one of the things that everyone just needs to understand a bit more.
Understand. And it's kind of, it doesn't matter where you come into it. And for me, I'm kind of somebody, just to put it into perspective, and I get like a lot of people say, oh, it's not about times, but I find that actually even in my category, the times drives me and it gives me a kind of bit of a benchmark in terms of, okay, if I can make it back to my 35 minutes, I know I'm okay. If I can make it back to my 29 minute, I know I'm smashing it. And it follows up from your story in terms of you have to make the most of those different opportunities. So I just had a major thoracic resection before Christmas, which involved like two deflated lungs and all those kind of things. I've had a lot of lung operations. And for anybody that's had a lot of lung surgery over, in their life, they'll know that exercise is, exercise, movement, whatever that looks like. And for me, running is actually part of my rehabilitation. Right. So the day before I went in to have my operation, I ran my fastest 5K because I knew, and I still haven't got back there. So this is like 3.5 months, no, 4 months now post surgery. And I'm still not back there. But it's because the reason I did that is because I had to make the most of the fact that I felt okay. I was about to have an operation, and if I didn't, it was now or never. Yeah. And if I didn't do it now, I knew that it's not going to happen for another 6 months, because to rebuild basically from scratch again, I have done the Couch to 5K app, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
But I've done it about 5 times over the last 5 years, because every single time I have an operation, I have to start again. And my level of fitness, kind of, I have a baseline, but I think people people assume that your progress always has to look kind of, you know, in a upward curve. And for people like me, it's never going to be like that. It's always going to be kind of making the most of whatever grabbed moment you can find.
Can we talk a little bit about the Vitality 10K and the Celebrate You campaign that's happening at the end of May that I know you're getting involved with? What was it about that race and that campaign that kind of attracted you to it?
Yeah, so I've been involved with it for a number of years. I think it's when it was happening in real life, and hopefully we will have the opportunity for that to happen again soon. It's a great race for anybody who's done it. Middle of London, like it ends in the malls, doesn't it? So it's you know, you kind of can feel like you're basically, well, you know, you've got the grand finale at the end. The atmosphere is really electric for that 10K as well, and the support around it is amazing. So from just a kind of race perspective, it's a really fun race that you can do with people. And then the whole theme is basically running for your head and your heart. So it's all about celebrating you. So the idea is actually the first year that we did it, there were nearly 1,000 women that signed up under this wave called Celebrate You, which is exactly what I'm talking about in terms of just like being that proud plodder and getting people just to say, yeah, I can give it a go. Because I think a lot of people think that it is exactly what Ben said earlier. I think a lot of people think they're not runners, and they think that they have to get to a certain speed to call themselves a runner. And they think that if you walk a little bit, then you're not a runner. And there's all this kind of like, I think people are a bit scared to just kind of say yes. So the hardest thing is just saying yes. So the wave encourages people to just kind of say yes, but also to recognize that actually exactly what we were talking about before, for a lot of us, running is a massive tool that we use, and it's great for our mental health. I think right now, I think we're all aware of the challenges in terms of the COVID climate that we're in, and actually getting more people to recognize that actually not a way out of it, but a way to support yourself out of it is through exercise. And sometimes people just need a little bit of encouragement. I think sometimes people just need to feel, oh yeah, go on then, I'll give it a go. If like my mates are giving it a go, go on then. You almost need to, like, not coerce people, but you sometimes just need somebody to kind of persuade you to do something.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's always like, well, invite a mate. And sometimes you end up doing some brilliant things, don't you? Sometimes you end up doing some outrageous things that you wish you hadn't said yes to. But it's kind of, it works either way.
Was this the wave of women that did it in your underwear? Were you in that? Was this the race? Because that was so empowering and amazing. I think, like, hopefully, I don't know, maybe you'll be doing it in your underwear again this year, but it was so great to watch, I think, from, like, as a female and as a runner and everything. I had so many mates message me being like, that's so cool, I want to do that next year. And we haven't had the race again in person yet, have we, to do it again?
So we did it, so you're right, yeah, we did it in our underwear. Like, it wasn't compulsory, and to be quite honest with you, I ended up wearing those like big running knickers, so I basically ended up wearing more than I probably run in on a hot day anyway. And I realized it was great because there's no chafing whatsoever, so it was kind of like, it was really good. It's really practical. But I don't recommend running around the streets in your underwear all the time. But it was really good, because it was also about the fact that I think a lot of people, regardless of their size, their shape, their body, they feel like, well, I'm not a runner, I don't look like a runner. But the reality is that runners look like all of us. Any single one of us can be a runner. And I think it's reminding people that you don't have to be this like skinny mini, like fit freak. Not saying that runners are like that, but you know what I mean. You don't have to kind of conform to a stereotype to be that runner. And the reason that we were doing it in our underwear was essentially to showcase that, to kind of say, look, we're all doing this and we can all do the 10K, and we don't care how slow we are. And that was really fun. And then obviously this year in COVID, last year, 2020, the race happened virtually. And myself and a socially distanced group of six. It was kind of, well, what are we allowed to do? So socially distanced group of six, we ran around Old Battersea Park in our underwear. And strangely, we didn't get that many weird looks. So I don't know whether COVID has just made us all kind of not even bat an eyelid at what we're doing outside. But nobody really blinked. So we did it in our underwear. And then hopefully this year, obviously there is the virtual option at the moment. And then hopefully later in the year, there may or may not be a scheduled in real life race. I hope so.
You've got a new book, Deborah, coming up, haven't you? How to Live When You Could Be Dead. Can you tell us a little bit about, I mean, it's an interesting title. What's it all about?
Yeah, so that's either coming out, depending on if I can put a rocket up my bum, either coming out on the weekend of the marathon, or knowing me, I think it will be the new year, if I'm being really honest with you. Actually, if I'm just being really honest with myself, you know, sometimes you have to kind of go, yeah, just be honest with yourself, Deborah, and recognize that you're not going to meet your deadline.
As long as your publisher doesn't listen to this, it's fine.
Yes, it's all right. My publisher has about 20 emails waiting in my inbox that I'm choosing to ignore because she knows blatantly well that I haven't done any of the edits required. So the first draft is written. And it's, so essentially my background was obviously in teaching. Well, I say obviously, my background was in teaching, and for 16 years I worked, I ended up being a deputy head, but I worked alongside loads of really fun education researchers looking at mindset. So we've all heard of growth mindset and what it looks like. Well, I hope we have. And essentially just the idea that you can use your mind to is exactly what we're talking about, to flip situations. And what we found in education was based on the work of a lady called Carol Dweck, who obviously created Mindset. It is great. It's the original Mindset book. If anybody hasn't yet read it, I'm sure millions of people around the world have read it.
Yeah.
But we found that, and even Carol is a critique of her own work. She found that actually it's all good and well knowing how to have a positive mindset, a growth mindset. But what she realized is when it was implemented in schools, when we in our adult lives actually implement it, none of us really know what to do. We don't have the tools. Like, we all go, yeah, we've got a growth mindset. And then we basically go, oh, no, I can't go and do 10K. And it's because we actually haven't been given the building blocks. So it's almost like comical in that Carol actually came out like recently, like last year, and kind of said, you know, my theory is great. However, unless we know how to actually break it down and apply it, it's pointless knowing that you think you can do anything. So essentially in the book, just from my own experience of living with cancer and having to kind of dig pretty deep, and then I talked to lots of other people who have faced pretty challenging situations. So what have they learned? How have they become resilient? How have they flipped their mindset? What have they learned from that? They're nuggets of advice, really, in terms of not just cancer, but in terms of if you're facing a new job and you think I can't do it, if you've got to stand up and do a new speech, how do you do it? It's essentially about self-reflection, if I'm being really honest with you. Yeah. Being prepared to fail, we all know this. But yeah, it's kind of a bit, it's not, hopefully not too teachery. I have got a tendency to end up kind of keep on talking about teaching, and I need to go, no, Deborah, there is like real life as well. I know teaching is real life, but I need to kind of like remember that not everything sits in a textbook.
No, it sounds really interesting. Well, whenever it comes out, we look forward to it. So we're going with Before the London Marathon. You've heard it here first, coming up.
You never know. If I can, no, I don't think so. And this is the irony. I was writing a sentence in the book the other day saying the irony about this entire book is it's based on growth mindset, basically giving yourself a big rocket up the arse. And I can't even meet a deadline right now. So the reality is that I can sit here and tell you the theory behind it, but none of us can do it. Like, we're all on this continuum of like self-improvement, and none of us will nail it. And I think that that's the reality, is that it's just always kind of looking back on yourself and being really reflective and saying, okay, well, I'm good at having the idea, I just am rubbish at managing my time or whatever it is, right? What am I going to do next time? And yeah, hopefully learning from my mistakes. Oh yeah, well, you never know. If I meet the deadline, I haven't learned. No, if I don't meet the deadline, I haven't learned.
Deborah, thanks very much for coming on the Runners World podcast. It was great to talk to you about running, and wish you all the best with all the book and your running in the future. It was great to talk to you. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me. It's really nice to chat.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. Thanks very much to our guest Deborah James, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can once again subscribe to 3 issues of Runners World magazine for just £5. Head to www.hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
The Runners World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runners World UK. Just search Runners World UK and click subscribe. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.